This is Nikki Darling.
And Rachel Reckitt from Crash Doll.
And you're listening to Power Rock Podcast with host Jim Madonna.
Crank it up.
Hey everyone, Jim Madonna here, your host of Power Rock Podcast. I'd like to welcome you all to yet another episode, bringing you the best interviews from around the globe, from indie to mainstream. And today is no different, because I have on the line smoking guitarist Rachel Reckitt and screaming vocalist Nikki Darling of Crash Dolls, supporting their much anticipated second album, Punks in America. Nikki, Rachel, welcome to the show.
Hi Jim, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Girls, thanks, I want to tell you... Oh, you're welcome. Thanks so much for giving me this opportunity to talk with you guys. You know, I've seen such an amazing transformation from 2013 when you came out with your self-titled album, Crash Dolls, with amazing songs like Novocaine, Dumpster Punk, Dollhouse. And now here we are in 2016 supporting your new album, Punks in America. And I just want to say congratulations on that album.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're really proud of it.
You should be, because you outdid yourself on this album. I mean, just the arrangements of the songs is just well done. It's a well-written, well-produced album, and, it's just a kick-ass job.
Awesome. Glad you like it.
You know, let's get started. Since the album, your first album came out, why don't you go ahead, and I'm going to turn the floor over to you and, you know, maybe give the listeners some history on what has brought us up to Punks in America. The floor is yours.
Well, yeah, a lot of stuff changed. We had to go through some changes in personnel, so we added Kevin Kikas from David Chassain and Damien. So we put a really great bass player in. We had some drummer things, and we had to get this top-notch drummer from Toledo, and we put him in, Garrett Crusher. We really wanted to take time to write the new record. We really felt like the writing on the first album was a real high watermark, and I didn't want to just follow it with half-ass or mediocre or something like that. We wrote probably three albums worth of material in that amount of time and discarded two of them. So, you know, the time frame was we did a lot of shows. We spread out, got to New York, New Jersey, and played around more, kind of spread out to some more people and wrote the new record. It really took some time to make sure these new songs were really going to stand up to that first record.
Nikki, I want to ask you this. I know you guys, when you originally came out with your first album, you got signed, and there was a lot on the line. There was a lot of emotion going on. What has transpired within yourself? How do you feel? Are you more comfortable now that you've really, you know, you've gotten into the groove, or what? You know, what's going on?
No, I've always been pretty comfortable on stage, so I wouldn't say I've gotten more comfortable. I'd say that what's changed probably between the first time out and this time around would just be, oh, God. I really think that it's a different... You know, the music has a whole different feel, one. So I think, you know, that's going to be different this time around. But I don't, you know, I mean, I don't know necessarily where I reach from. You know, I mean, different songs mean different things to me, so I reach from different places. But no, I wouldn't say we're more comfortable or that I'm more comfortable. I would just say that it's a completely different kind of feel. You know, I think there's less that we feel like we have proved. You know, maybe I feel like first time out, we felt like there was, you know, something that we had proved, that we could stand up to the boys. You know, we could won in metal. We could rock as hard as they could. And, you know, Rachel wasn't up there, you know, twiddling her thumbs and, you know, looking cute, or, you know, that I wasn't up there, you know, just trying to be pretty, or, you know, that, you know, it was really about the music and proving ourselves as artists, I think, the first time around. I think this time, if there's more comfort, it's just on the level of that I feel like we probably feel like we have to prove.
I noticed, you know, on the websites, you know, the awards that you guys have won, you know, Best New Band 2015, Best Band, Rockwired Magazine, Best Song 2014 for Female Anarchy. You know, the list goes on and on and on. So, you know, like I'd stated before, it's just that, you guys have truly have just an amazing accomplishment. Let's go ahead and talk about the album Punks in America. And the first track I want to talk about is called Hellcat. Why don't you give us some history on that that particular track?
I remember there was two things that kind of pulled from that for me. That was the music starts with me, and I'm always trying to go in some new direction. And that was the one track I felt like you know, we had written some stuff that was different, and I felt like I needed a song that was kind of a nod to the first record, which is kind of why we opened the record with Hellcat. It's a, in a way, it's kind of like saying, okay, we recognize what first album was. Here's another example of that. So the music to me is somewhat similar of a track maybe that would have been on the first album. Then I had the idea for having a song called Hellcat. I really wanted a song called Hellcat. I remember bringing that to Nikki, and then I brought her the demo, and she started writing all this stuff about like a car, and we didn't realize that there was a Hellcat car, you know, like a Charger or something. So it just all, it fell together, and her lyric just fit so perfectly into that song. Our collaboration is so much better and different now. That's kind of where it originated, and that's kind of how it fell together.
Now, who does the most of the writing within Crash Dolls?
I would say we both do. I just think a lot of stuff gets thrown away. We're really picky. There's songs Rachel has written that we've tossed. There's songs that I've written for sure that we've tossed. I would say, it's all the music, obviously, like Rachel said, comes from Rachel. Rachel is the, arrangement of the music. And lyrically, I would say that this time, on the first album, it was less of an even split, maybe. I think there was more that Rachel had written than myself. And on this album, I think it's pretty even to what we, what we've put into it and, lyrically and musically.
Yeah, I think there was something that happened with me when I first hit on the sort of Crash Dolls blueprint sound, which I think is unique, and that's kind of a weird way of writing. It doesn't sound like other stuff. And like when I first hit on it as a writer, songs just started pouring out of me really fast, and it kind of bulldozed over Nikki. She didn't really have time to catch up with a lot of it. I really appreciate that she let me sort of have my vision with some of those tracks. But this time around,
the way that Rachel plays is very different from anything that I've ever done before. So to write to in the way that the music is played and the vision that we had for the sound of the band is actually really difficult, which I think is what makes it very difficult for others to even mimic us.
Well, that's cool.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Well, I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and let the listeners hear Hellcat with Crash Dolls on Power Rock Podcast. All right, welcome back. We are with Rachel and Nikki of Crash Dolls, and you know, that song, like all these songs that I have chosen, they just kick ass. Great job.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Rachel, let me ask you, what have you noticed differently in the music business when you guys started, when you formed in 2010 up till today? What have you noticed? Do you have like an opinion on the music industry? Do you think it's has it gotten worse? Has it gotten better? What is your feelings on it?
Well, I think it's constantly changing. It's an industry that's in flux right now. I think even people who are deeply into the industry and, you know, run companies and stuff, a lot of them are still scrambling, trying to figure out what to do to create revenue streams and whatever. Particularly for rock, it's not an easy sell like it used to be. But myself personally, you know, to get to the point where we're signed and there's endorsements and there's, you know, PR companies and different things, for me, I almost feel like I lost my innocence, because I always felt music was just like this magical thing that I did in a room that was for me. And if I shared it with my friends, or, you know, if I took it to a stage and shared it with an audience, it was just handing my heart and soul to people. When you get into the business, at some point, you know, suddenly there's a value put on that. And I, like, to me, if you listen to that song Hellcat, to me, I don't know if that song's worth 5 cents or $5 million, because to me, it's the same thing. It's still what came out of us, and it means more to me than it'll ever mean to anybody. But when you have to start, you know, signing these contracts and people get percentages, and it's just, to me, I feel like I lost an innocence that I had before that I'll never get back, because when you get into the industry and into the business at a certain level, it just gets weird to me. I don't know that I like it.
Okay, how about you?
But it's inevitable. You know, it's inevitable. As you get successful, you got to take those moves.
How about you, Nikki? What's your feelings on it?
You know, I pretty much feel the same way. I feel like, you know, the difference between, you know, I mean, through the years and the things that you, you know, learn and see and how you have to deal with things, you know, the people you have to deal with, monetary values of things, you go into it, I guess, maybe with rose-colored glasses. I think everybody does. And then once you get to the point where you're actually signing papers and, you know, you're doing stuff and just the hustle and all of it, it jades you a little bit, I think. You know, I mean,
right.
And I wouldn't say jades you. I would just say, I guess I would say toughens you up anyways, for sure.
Yeah, when you put your name on that dotted line, it really puts things in perspective, I could only imagine.
Yeah, and, you know, there's also the idea that now you have people who are kind of counting on you to help them have a career and help them have a successful business. And too, it's on us to deliver the product that they can sell. And I guess that whole jump from making art, making product, is one that was a very difficult jump for me personally, I think for Nikki as well. But when you talk about the time it took to go from, you know, having that first independent record self-released and into the area that we're at now, to me, that one of the biggest things that changed was getting my head around the idea that my art was becoming a product. That's awesome.
Well, and the people were changing something that you were, you know, Rachel, myself, and band, and the people that have supported us are really on the line for that stuff, you know. And, you know, certainly don't want to disappoint anybody. We don't want to disappoint ourselves. But at the same time, when you start handing over control to other people, me and Rachel are control freaks. So, I mean, that is a certain amount of, you know, I mean, that we are what's gotten us to this point, not somebody else. So it's hard to let people come in and handle things for you.
So it definitely has its pros and cons once you put that signature on the dotted line.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, let's go ahead and talk about another song on the Punks in America CD. This one here I want to talk about is Scumbag Superstar. How about some history on that one?
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't know where, you know, I mean, I can't say where the music, you know, and I mean, to some extent, you know, the name or the idea or however, what Rachel's process is with that. But lyrically, you know, we were sitting on a couch, actually, and she was playing it for me and played it over and over again. She's like, I'm having a really hard time with this one, you know, I mean, we kind of talked about it, and I was like, oh, my God, you know, me too. Like, I mean, and we just literally kind of sat there and listened to the music over and over and over and over. And I was like, you know, I just keep hearing, like, you know, this line, you know, you're a bad motherfucker. And that's really all I, you know, and Rachel had already had Scumbag.
title. So, I mean, to some extent, I'm sure she had something, you know, processing in her brain. And we pretty much, that was what, like the second, wasn't it the second to last track that we
We felt like we had to get like two more that were really going to be killer. And that was one of the last. Yeah, it was, that was a troublesome track because, and I remember when she came up with that, it felt like, well, that's like the kill hook for the song right there. You know, it's great. I ended up filling in like the rest of the lyrics, but that line that she did is really the main hook of the whole song, that melody there. And I love that song. It's one of the songs, I think it's got just like an energy to it that just, it stomps. I love the guitar solo too, if I may be so bold.
Well, like I had...
That's very funny that you would say that too, because I really appreciate that, because that is like, I think, something that I wrote the least one, like, you know, set of words, and so I appreciate all that credit, but that's seriously not, you know, I don't feel like the main, you know, focus of the song. The song is really good on many different levels. Overall, the whole lyric, you know, I mean, the song is actually lyrically really good.
Like I had stated before, they're all, you know, lyrically, you know, guitar driven. It's they're great songs all the way around. So I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and let the listeners hear Scumbag Superstar with Crash Dolls.
Yeah.
Scumbag Superstar.
Again, we are back with Nikki and Rachel of Crash Dolls, and once again, kick-ass tune, girls, man. Let me ask you this. You know, when you did your first album back in 2013, your debut album, now, again, we're back here in 2016. Is there a favorite, would you say? Would you say that this album here, Punks in America, is your baby? Or how would you define that? What's your emotion, you know, between the two albums?
Wow, that's a question I've never been asked. You know, I don't even know how to answer that because I have different emotions myself about different things at different times in our life. And that's like, I really do love them both equally for different reasons. And they would be, you know, enormous to totally list. But, you know, I love the first album because it's what got us to where we are now. And I love this album because it's going to get us to, you know, a completely different place that we will be in the future. So I don't know that I feel, you know, I don't know that it, you know, I feel different about either of them or like one more than the other. They're kind of like children and you can't play favorites.
Yeah, that's true. That's a great analogy. I feel like the first album was sort of this collection of punches. You know, we were just, every song was a punch to the mouth. We were so, like she was saying, trying to prove something, and every track was do or die. Yeah, it was really like a sniper shot, and it was a kill shot every time. Like, you had to take the person down with every track. This one sounds to me more like a coherent unit, and I think that it's an organic identity as a record. It ebbs and flows. The track list actually has an organic feel to it, and as a complete record, I think it's a more mature statement. The first album was more like a collection of punches to your face.
That's a great answer, you know, because I don't mean to repeat myself, but both albums are outstanding. And but you like you know, this one here, especially Punks in America, definitely, in my opinion, rises above your first album. However, I'm not putting your first album down at all. You know, I love that album as well, but this one definitely has, you know, the arrangement, everything is it's different, and you guys have proved yourself. It's quite apparent that you have.
You know, I think with the last album, what it was is there were songs people loved. That, you know, some people really got onto Dollhouse, or somebody got really onto Dumpster Punk or Bad Taste Barbie or something.
Right.
But with this album, I think it's the whole album. You know, this album stands up to repeated listenings front to back.
Another track I want to talk about is a song called Smack My Bitch Up. How about some history on that one?
That was actually the first thing that we worked on after recording the first album. We do not do covers ever. Every person we've ever dealt with in the industry has always tried to go, oh, you guys need to do, you know, Cherry Bomb from the Runaways. It'd be so awesome and whatever. We've always been against all that. And myself as a writer, I don't think doing a cover song is worth anything unless you rewrite it and change it to be your own. Nikki and I, after that first album was recorded, her and I were listening to a lot of electronic music, and I was a big Prodigy fan from before she was too. And I want to say a couple specific points of why that track is that there's a reason why we chose that. And it wasn't just that I had rewritten the music and the lyrics and everything was so changed. But it was because that song was, if you recall, when it came out, it had a lot of criticism for being misogynistic against women. And so in one sense, it's our way of reclaiming that song for women. The other thing is that was really kind of the last rock and roll song that I recall that being like, you know, Prodigy was the last band that was given this mantle of, okay, it's your guys' turn to keep rock and roll alive. And Prodigy didn't break in America. So that was kind of where rock and roll kind of fell off the map, because Prodigy couldn't hold it up. So to me, it was like, I want to take where they left off and they couldn't take it. We're going to take it. So that was the two reclaimings that I wanted to do with that song. But I think we did such a rewrite, it's like an original.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Here it is. Smack My Bitch Up with Crash Dolls on Power Rock Podcast. And again, we are back with Rachel and Nikki of Crash Dolls. And again, kick-ass tune. Nikki,
Rachel, you know, Nikki is still, like, the bitchiest person I know. I don't know why. Like, between when, as soon as there's, like, what was that song, 5 minutes long? As soon as there's some break in the time, that's all she does is start ragging on me about shit. Why is that?
I don't know. Sometimes I hate your face.
That's what it is.
Sometimes I love your face. It just really depends upon the moment.
So weird. I mean, I don't even have to do anything wrong. She just starts fucking with me.
I've been loving your face a little bit more, but, you know, that whole comment right there might have just changed shit.
You know what's hilarious is, Nikki, you have stated twice now that you're the, you kind of fly by the seat of your pants kind of person. So I'm really getting the drift of where you're coming from.
I think it's funny that you think you understand.
Oh, so what you're really saying is, okay, I don't get it at all then, right?
I have no idea. I still have no idea. I can't understand Nikki Darling at all. She's a complete mystery to me.
That is hilarious. Nikki, let me ask you this question. Do you guys have any upcoming gigs?
We will be, yes. Nothing that we have announced yet, but we do have dates lined up.
The strategy was, and, you know, again, this is kind of when you start getting involved with record companies and PR companies who are like, okay, the marketing strategy is this, and it changes from what we would have maybe organically done on our own. But the strategy is just that we, right? I mean, it's totally kind of different than what we would be out right now. We'd be out there on the stages just, you know, ripping shows out. But strategy was to hold back, get the record out, get the industry people to hear it, because a lot of big industry people are waiting to hear this record. So it's a big, like, chance to see if they're going to put us on a huge tour or there's going to be a bigger signing or something like that. So that's kind of why there's been a bit of a soft release, and we didn't just go out and do CD release parties. So we're going to be doing some shows to showcase the record.
And clearly, we have no strategy pretty much to anything that we do. I mean, there is some strategy, obviously, in the business end, but I mean, everything else is, you know, there's not much strategy to anything that we do. So,
yeah, and it's kind of nice to have somebody who understands marketing. I don't really, that's not what I do. You know, I'm a writer, I'm a guitar player, performer, I'm not a businesswoman, but, you know, the idea that what we need to do is showcase the record to industry people, as well as, you know, so that our fans can see us that haven't seen us in a while. It's not about going out there and just playing every show we can do for the next year to try to build the record up. It's really showcase the record, see if we get a bigger bite, and then maybe take it into a whole different level. You know, so that's kind of the strategy at this point.
All right. Well, I want to ask you one more question, and we're going to go ahead and close the show out. And it's this. When you two girls leave this earth, how do you want your friends, family, and fans to remember you by?
Probably, not the answer anyone's looking for. It's just, I don't, honestly, I swear you've asked me this before. It's a part of musical history and all that shiznit.
How about you, Rachel?
Well, I want to be remembered for the originality that we brought to the table. I think we changed something in Detroit punk and Detroit rock and roll in the teens. There's certainly been a lot of changes in the local scene with bands who are trying to cop something or another from us. I'm hoping that someday when they write, you know, the book about rock and roll, we're going to have a nice big fat chapter in it. But I want to be remembered for being creative and original, creating a sound that doesn't sound like anybody else. If there's anything I'm really proud of, it's that.
Well, that's a great
answer. And I do believe that, too. I do believe that we will be in, and me and Rachel talked about this, I do believe we will be part of, you know, Detroit history as far as music.
I think both of you have had great answers. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and close the show out. And girls, I just want to tell you that I truly do wish you the utmost success in that all you do. And I hope that all your plans, all your dreams, everything that you want just comes to, you know, reality, and you hit those main stages and you take punk rock, hard metal, you take it to the heart, you take it to the streets of Detroit and around the world. And I truly do, again, wish you all the best of success.
Thank you for all the support, Jim.
You're more than welcome. Well, there it is. An interview, Nikki Darling and Rachel Reckitt of the Crash Dolls. I am Jimmy Donahue, your host of Power Rock Podcast. We're going to go ahead and close the show with one more song. This one here is called Get Away, Man. Crank it up.